Hey everyone, it's Christina Driscoll, host of the She's Brave podcast. I'm so glad you're here with me. I did not start out brave at all, but I learned that we can do brave things one small step at a time. After caregiving for my husband and son for 12 years, it was definitely time for my next chapter. I wanted to get brave women's voices out there in the world. And more importantly, I want all of you to have the courage and the resilience to live your best authentic life. So come along with me and learn how to live your best life. And I want you to hear the brave voices of women all around the world. Hey everyone, it's Christina with the She's Brave podcast. Today's guest is nothing short of amazing, you guys. She sold her dry bar business for hundreds of millions of dollars. It's a long story. There's a lot to this. Ali Webb is so authentic. She's so real. She lays it all out on the line. She's a New York Times bestselling author, business advisor, mentor and co-founder of several businesses, most notably Drybar, which grew from one simple idea to hundreds of locations and a full hair care and styling product line, which she sold in 2019. She lives in Los Angeles and is the author of her latest book, The Messy Truth: How I Sold My Business for Millions But Almost Lost Myself, which I just read and absolutely loved. Okay, you guys, like, that title alone, doesn't it just make you want to just know her? I feel like I know her already. I'm so excited to welcome her. Ali, hey, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for that amazing intro.
Oh my gosh. I have 8 pages of notes, Ali. We're not going to get through them, but we are going to get so much out of this conversation. You guys, I wish this book had been out a year ago, a year and a half ago when I started my podcast, because I feel like she gives the best entrepreneur advice that I could have used a year and a half ago. But I'm going to be quoting a lot of stuff out of your book, Ali, today. And amazing. I'm going to start with this one. And this resonated with me when I started She's Brave. And it was a big reason why I started She's Brave. You said, "My self-worth has largely been entangled with many things, romantic partners, businesses, outside validation. I've done a lot of outsourcing instead of self-sourcing, and I'm coming to realize that I have relied on other people and things to make me happy for far too long. I've slowly come to realize that no one else can make me happy. Not my husband, not my kids, not my success, not my readers, not my friends." When I read that, Ali, I went, that is me 100%. Like, I have just in the last year come to that same realization. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the book, and then Ali's going to jump in and we're going to discuss some of her concepts and things in the book, which it's amazing. Okay, if you've come to her book, The Messy Truth, for fluffy takeaways on how to reach millionaire status, this book isn't for you. Although, obviously, she did sell her company for millions and millions and millions, hundreds of millions. She says, quote, "I am a living, breathing example of just how high one can climb and how fast one can fall." Okay, that statement right there makes me want to read the book right there. You also say, "Don't get me wrong, I want you to have it all, but I don't want you to do it by living someone else's story. I want you to own your shit. I want you to embrace your mess. I want you to find the magic in your chaos. I want you to be real." And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. So, Ali, I want to go to one last quote and then we're going to dive in, because I want you to just briefly tell us about how you started Drybar, but there's so much more to your story. And that's what's so incredible about this book, is that you're real. You're 100% relatable. You've made mistakes. And if you can do it, anybody can do it. So you say, when we started Dry Bar, we reinvented something that already existed, blowouts. We just created a much better experience around getting a blowout. And you talk about this concept in your book of, I think a lot of us think about entrepreneurship and we think, oh, well, that's already invented. Like somebody's already done that. Uh-huh. And I just love this concept of, but I just have an idea of how to make it better. So tell us a little bit more about that journey.
So I think we all know, and it's no secret, that necessity is the mother of invention. I mean, we live this all the time, and anything that you think about that you love in your life likely was started because somebody had a need for something that didn't exist. And so they created it. And there is example after example after example of successful businesses that have done this. But I think that for me with Dry Bar, I wasn't, and I want to be clear about this, because I wasn't opportunistic. I was not that I think there's anything wrong with that. I am very opportunistic as a human. But I just was, as the seeker I am, I was seeking out something to fulfill me in a way that I wasn't, and trying to figure out what that thing was. And the only thing I was really good at was doing hair as a skill, or so I thought back then. And so when my kids were 2 and 4, I started my mobile business straight at home, which would, of course, lead to Dry Bar, which was really a way to get out of the house for a little while and get away from the kids and do something for myself, kind of scratch that itch that I had to start doing something for myself again. Because my whole life, since I was like 15, I was working. Even before that, my parents were entrepreneurs. They had their own business. So I worked for them. And it was like, go, 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 go for so many years until I had my first son, Grant, and then my second son, Kit. And by the way, I thought I had hit the jackpot, and I felt so lucky to be able to stay home and be with my kids. And I did that for 5 years. And then, like I said, I just got this really strong desire to go and do something for myself, for me. And that's how I dreamt up the idea to do this mobile business, which, if you know my story, that I was only charging $40 to go to women's homes, 220s, really easy. And it was so much more about getting out of the house, doing something for myself, earning a little extra cash than it was to like build this big business. I just needed something that made me happy, and I was really good at doing hair. So this idea that came from such a pure place of love and something that I really enjoyed doing and that I could do on my own schedule obviously turned into what became Dry Bar. And what I think the insight of that idea was that I'm doing this mobile service for women at a really inexpensive price because I just wanted to be busy. And I was like, if I'm charging $100 or $200 or $300, which is pretty much the norm if you're going to someone's home, it wasn't going to necessarily work as well as it did. So to charge $40 was easy to make it happen. So that also would lead to the inexpensive, as we coined it, affordable luxury that became Dry Bar that had never been done. And to your point, like we didn't invent blowouts. We just created a better experience, a better price point. Like the whole thing was reimagined. And I've been a hairstylist for almost all my life. I mean, I went to beauty school when I was in my early 20s. And so I've worked in many, many hair salons, and there's great things and amazing things. And then there's things that I didn't like and didn't want. And I was able to kind of tailor the exact experience that I wanted as a woman, to walk into a space and not feel pressured for cut and color, to not be like assaulted with the smells, for it to feel really inclusive and to feel really welcomed. And even though you don't have the latest bag or whatever, and the mom and pop feel, but with the high end look. And that was my vision. And I didn't know if it would work. I really didn't. I felt like surely this will work. On one location, it was Brentwood, LA. It was the first shop. And that was like right like in the middle. It was like the hub of where my clients for my mobile business, because I'd gotten so busy with that, was like, if you know LA, it's like Palisades, Santa Monica, Brentwood, Beverly Hills. It's all pretty close. And I thought, instead of me going to them, let me have them come to me. I'll charge a fraction of what anybody can get for a good blowout in this town. And hope for the best. I went to my brother and asked him for the money to help me get this thing off the ground. And so it was just like this little kind of crazy dream that I had to open up one shop and then leave and pick up my kids from preschool. And of course, that didn't happen. And my life got completely turned upside down. And we realized this business really resonated with women far and wide. And I would love to tell you that I knew that that was going to happen, but I didn't. Like I said, it was not like I was a hungry entrepreneur looking for to start a really successful business. It just didn't start like that. It started out of necessity.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's so many angles, and I'm going to try to cram in as much as we can with your entrepreneurship. But like, I remember at one point you were growing really fast and investors were coming to you and they were saying things like, oh, why don't you branch out and start doing manicures and stuff? And you said no. So tell us more about that.
Well, like I said, first of all, I don't want to do that because I don't know that business. And I don't know that world. And sure, I could have brought in somebody to help manage that piece of the business. But there just felt like such a purity in that we were just doing blowouts. And I wanted to be the best at blowouts. And I knew, because I've been in this business for so long, I knew how hard it was going to be to deliver on that. And that's where our internal kind of tagline was like, we do one thing and we're the best at it. And I think that also having grown up in the salon world, and even as a little kid, like going, my mom used to go to a hair salon where she got her color done, she got her manicure, she got this and that. You know, it was good enough, but you can be good at several things, but it's hard to be great at one thing. And I didn't want to kind of water down the experience of the best fucking blowout you're going to get anywhere in this town. And so that was what was driving me. So I thought if we started to introduce things like manicures or makeup or the conveniences that, of course, I understood because we're busy and we want to be able to knock out as many things as we can at once. I get that thinking, but I just felt like I wanted to be the best at this one thing. And I wanted to keep it really simple and just about hair and blowouts. Yep. And again, it was just my instinct.
Yeah.
And it was like the only thing I really knew. I mean, if I had introduced manicures or makeup or whatever, it's like, I don't know those worlds. So like as the leader and founder of this company, if something goes wrong, which it will in regards to a bad manicure or someone doesn't like their makeup or whatever, like I can't fix that. So it felt like a little out of control to me. Whereas like someone doesn't like their hair, I can do that blowout and fix it. And I know exactly what's wrong with that. And I know how to train on that. Yeah. But I wouldn't have known how to do that in any other category.
I just absolutely love that you listened to your intuition. Like sometimes all these experts are telling you stuff. Like even me, when I came up with my logo, a fellow podcast classmate said to me, I'm an advertising expert and your logo is wrong because of XYZ. And I just was like, it feels right. And here we are.
So it's interesting though. It's like the opposite sides of a coin because I agree with you. And obviously, like, I really stuck to my guns. And this is like what I felt in my gut and all of that. But I do think I'm going to contradict myself because I do think there's an argument, which I see entrepreneurs make this mistake all the time of like when they're building a store or they're doing a bunch of things that they're not great at and they're not the expert at.
And, yeah. And you talk like, about that in your book.
Yeah.
You talk about that, having to let go. Like you were trying to micromanage for a while.
Yeah. But I mean, even like as far as like if you hire an architect to build out a space, but then you don't listen to anything he says.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Definitely. Because, definitely.
But I mean, it's like,
oh, yeah. 100%. Like going against that expert was hard for me, but it's very, very deep feeling. And you talk about it in the book too. Like you talk about just when you have this feeling. And I love also how relatable you are as far as all my listeners out there who are thinking, well, look at her, like she was born that way. No, when you read the book, you are not born that way. In fact, I'm quoting you again. You may grow into being an entrepreneur and get to a point where you just have to do this thing. And that's exactly how I feel, Allie. I feel like I'm not this born, popped out of the womb entrepreneur, but I think that you can literally grow into it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, granted, I did grow up in an entrepreneurial environment. So I did have.
Neither did I. Oh, you did, though. You did. And I didn't. Did. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I certainly had kind of ingrained in me. But with that said, when I say ingrained, I mean, I just watched how my parents operated a business. Like I watched how my parents treated people and how they ran their business. But of course, I wasn't paying attention. And even as I got out into the world, like going way back, I wanted to be a professional tennis player. And then I wanted to be a stylist, like a fashion stylist. And then I worked in PR for a while. Like I did all sorts of stuff. I never had an entrepreneurial like drive. I was happy to work with people. I mean, one of my favorite jobs was I was an assistant for this guy. His name is Paul Freund. Like he ran the music division at Rogers and Cowan, which is a really big PR firm when I lived in New York. And that was like, I loved being an assistant, you know, I mean, and that, by the way, wasn't really, it turned out to be a very important job for me because I learned how to compose like professional emails. Like I'd never done that before. You know, yeah. I mean, I really believe all of my stops, and there were many as in my 20s, were all important in different ways. But it's interesting to me now. It's like I go and I speak at colleges all the time that have entrepreneurial programs, and I didn't go to college, and I may have gone to college if there was an entrepreneurial program, maybe, but I wasn't thinking about any of that stuff then. When I see these kids who are like 18, 19, 20 years old and they want to start a business, I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Like I didn't, have any desire or ambition to start a business. I didn't obviously start Drybar until I was 35, and the mobile business idea came to me. So maybe it was in me perhaps all the time, but now it's like, now that I have like the pump has been primed, and now it's like, I can't go anywhere without thinking like, how could this business be better? And why is this being done better and all of that? But back then it wasn't like, oh, I've got to just figure out a business. Like I said before, it was like, this is a thing that is missing in the world. Just the same thing with like our concept Squeeze, which is a massage concept, and this other brand that we've started, the same founding team as Drybar. It was like massages are everywhere, but they're not done very well in most places.
So we invented such a great example.
It's a whole other experience with looking at the app and all the bells and whistles that happen at Squeeze. And it is another example of like, it can exist. It probably does exist. I mean, unless you're Steve Jobs and you invent the iPhone, there's a very good chance that something that you want to do exists, but there's an opportunity to make it better.
I love that so, so much. This kind of segues into another quote from your book, because you sold your business, and thank God you actually sold it before COVID, and now you're onto all these other things. And I want to quote you and then discuss it. You say in the book, most of us know when it's time to pivot. We can feel that crackle of energy beneath the surface with our next big idea. But when you step into that new thing, you can't bring the old thing with you. And you also talk a lot about having to let go of Drybar. Wow.
Yeah.
Something I never thought about.
Yeah. I mean, I forgot about that line, but I love it. The crackle. Like, it's such a good way to put it. It's been a long time now since I don't know if you've written a book yet, but once you write a book, you're like, I have to stop reading it. I have to stop editing it. Like, I can't do it anymore. So it's been a minute since I've looked at it.
But
I mean, there is that. And for anybody who's listening who has started their own business or is on the verge of starting a business, it's like that feeling, that excitement, the crackle of like, I just can't think about anything else. I have
That's
to
That's what
do
happened. This, you know? Yep. And then I read that and I went, oh my gosh, like there's like a million parts of the book where I just totally connected with you. And when I read that line, I went, that's how I felt when I started my podcast. Like, it was the same concept. It was the same. And then the same thing when I started teaching podcasting, like I'm already teaching it. Like, I just felt like I have to do this. I have to. You
know? Yeah. 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 It's pretty amazing. And that's the tap on the shoulder. That's the call of like, I really need to go and figure this out. You know, and listen, I mean, the cold hard facts are most businesses don't make it. And that is a reality, but you will never know. Of course, you've heard this quote, you'll never know if you don't try. You just never know. And you just don't know what's going to hit and what's going to work and what's going to resonate. And again, I would love to tell you like, oh, it was in the bag with Drybar. It wasn't. It was such a risk. And we did not know it was going. Yep. And it was like, we were starting at the tail end of a recession. And obviously like, had I started Drybar now, I mean, who knows? But even like what's happened in the world and like so much has swung away from experiences, which I think it's going to swing back. But
it will
in a huge way. But it's just when I tell you, it felt like the stars aligned and we had captured lightning in a bottle. It really did feel like that. It was like the right place at the right time, the right people. It was like my My ex-husband was this creative genius. My brother was this business genius. I knew hair. We were all able to like work for free for years. Like it was just it's so like a confluence of so many things lining up. And that is hard to come by. It's magic in a lot of ways. But of course, it's tons of hard work.
Yes,
too. But,
yes. But I want to give you some credit, Allie. I'm going to read off a bunch of quotes from your book. You have a tremendous amount of grit. And I don't know if you've seen that TED Talk where this expert says that that is the number one predictor of success is having grit, you know, being an entrepreneur. I'm gonna read off some of these. You said in your book, learning from failing. There's a lot of failure, but you learned. You said, fear stands in the way of most things in our lives. My advice, just start anyway.
Yeah.
Another one, no one has all the answers. Just keep going. Here's another one. We're all imposters when we start. That's how experts are created. And I went, yeah, we all start from nothing. And you say that in the book too. We all start from nothing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's amazing how many of us can look at somebody else who's done X, Y, and Z and be like, oh man, I want to be like that. And like, I wish, and I do too. I'm totally guilty of this. But they also had to start somewhere. And at some point, you do have to take a leap and jump into a role or a position or a business or being a mom or like whatever it is that you have absolutely no real business being there or training, and you get thrown in and you learn as you go. I mean, you know, of course, I believe in preparation and in getting as much information as you can about a thing before you start it. And all of that is obviously wise and valuable, but there is a certain intangible in all of that where you just, at some point you're going to start and you're like, well, shit, I don't really know exactly what I'm doing, but I'm going to try my best to learn it as I go, to figure it out, to ask people all the things that you have to do. And yes, to your point, we all start there. We all start with like, I'm not really sure. And I think the difference between an entrepreneur and somebody who doesn't want to be an entrepreneur is that entrepreneur has that mindset of like, I'm going to put it all on the line and it might not work, but they have to have a high degree of pain, which is not resistance, but knowing that there's a very good chance that they're going to fail. But you have to be able to have that like threshold of like, yeah, that's a possibility, but I have thick enough skin. I'm going to try it anyway and see what happens.
Yeah. Or even if you don't have thick skin like me, I don't think I had thick skin when I started, but I slowly, slowly developed it over time. And I also love this line in your book, if you feel like an imposter, embrace it. And I learned how to do that too.
Yeah. I mean, me too. And I think especially I wasn't a very good student in school. I didn't go to college. And I remember even like in the early days of Drybar, once we raised our first like initial big tranche of money, and now we had this big private equity, these really smart people. And we had a board. And I remember our first board meeting, like I did not know what a board meeting was. I mean, the amount of things I didn't know is pretty staggering, just especially the fact that like Drybar is as successful as it was, because I knew so little. But I remember sitting in a board meeting and being like, I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. I don't know what I'm supposed to be saying. I don't know how I'm supposed to show up. Like, so confused and so intimidated, because these were really, really smart people who've gone to like Harvard and Stanford and Yale.
Wow.
And they knew all this shit.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my God, I was so intimidated by them. And I remember, I think I put this in the book, I remember like texting my brother questions I had as we were diving into the business and whatever, because I was embarrassed to ask them because I was afraid it was going to sound stupid. And my brother, God bless him, was like, no, that's a good question. You should ask. And he said that enough times that I finally was like, okay, I'm going to put this crazy insecurity I have and just be who I am. And if they see that I don't know things that I think I should know, who cares? This is my idea. Like, we're all sitting in this room because of me. And even like Steve Berg, who I mentioned in the book, who was our kind of our lead with Castanea. I mean, he also, I was really lucky in this regard that he was also like, no, Allie, be you. Like, you be you. And we're here to support you and support this business. Like, there was a lot of people in my corner that were kind of giving me that advice, which is exactly why I feel so compelled. I felt so compelled to write this book, and I feel so compelled to give that back to other entrepreneurs, because I had so many people in my ear saying, yeah, go be you. No, don't add manicures. Like, do that, do this. Like, that feels right to you. Even like when we were launching in Sephora, which I don't think I put this in the book, but when we were launching our product line in Sephora, the powers that be and the people that were really running the show over there also would pull me aside and say, don't listen to anybody else. Follow your vision, follow your heart, follow what you feel is right. Because there was a lot of cooks in the kitchen when we were developing the product line, and I wanted, I mean, there's kind of a story, which I don't think I put in the book, about like one of our investors, Janet Gerwich, who's amazing and really introduced us to Sephora. And she was the founder of Laura and CEO of Laura Mercier Cosmetics. And she's amazing. And anyways, we had this, like, as I was developing products and she was really helping me, we had this kind of disagreement, if you will, on the fragrance of the product. And I had gotten it down to like two, like, strong directions for scent. And she wanted this one and I wanted that one. And I was like, you know what, Janet? I just got to go with what I feel is right. And that really, that decision was hard, because Janet was obviously really smart. And like, she built a massive product line. She like ran Neiman Marcus for years. Like, she was very smart, very accomplished. And it was hard for me to find it within myself to say, no, I don't agree. This is my name. This is my product. This is my company. Like, I have to do what I feel is right. And I think that confidence came from lots of things, but it certainly did help me to have people around me who were like, you be you and you go do what you feel is right. And so I did, went with my gut on that, which turned out to be a pretty good decision.
And you know, I just want to interject, like, I don't think what the audience doesn't know, if they haven't read the book yet, is you write about being conflict avoidant, hated conflict. Okay, that was me too. And then when you become an entrepreneur, you slowly overcome that, right? Like, because you can't sweep stuff under the rug. You can't do that anymore. Your business will never take off if you do. So that story that you just told, like, that just shows how much growth you went through, like, how much you changed.
Yeah. I mean, and it really did happen, like, before my very own eyes too. Like, I saw myself emerging, and I was a kid who, you know, for better or worse, my brother was like always getting all the attention as a kid. He was the one who was either always in trouble or always being praised. And believe it or not, it's hard to believe now, but I was like a wallflower, and I was like always in the background. And my parents were more surprised than anybody of like this whole idea being mine and like what my life has become and all of that, because my brother was always kind of in the spotlight, either in trouble or being praised. And for me, I really came out of my shell and found my voice and my agency in the early on in the dry bar years, because I realized like the buck stopped with me. Like, this is my name was all over this thing. This was my idea. I was out front on purpose. And it was like, you've got to like really step into this role, Allie, and you have to really own this. And I stumbled around a lot in the beginning, but I finally did. And it was really quite transformative and amazing for me to step into that and like own who I was, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Love it so much. Okay. Here's another couple really powerful lines in a totally different direction. You said, as my business blew up, ha ha ha, right? Like blow.
I know.
Blow
it's the best out. Time. That's kind I of use my, it all the time.
I just have to say that. Okay. As my business blew up, so did my personal life. Like, really blow up. And then in another part of the book, you say the best parts of life are the most messy parts. Wow. So tell us more about those things.
Well, I mean, I think in the moment they don't feel right, you know?
Yeah. In the moment they don't feel that way at all.
I mean, of course. And it's like, we don't learn and grow out of things being happy and rosy all the time. We're in a happy state and like, we're kind of just going along when things are good, and when things fall apart. And I mean, I've read every book under the sun about this. And I'm more of a seeker in this area of my life now than anywhere else, because I'm finally dealing with a lot of things that I swept under the rug and that I didn't want to talk about and didn't want to talk about conflict to avoid it for so many years. But the real growth and us transforming and becoming better humans and living in a different like vibration, it happens only, I believe, when we've really been through the shit. I mean, one of my favorite things that I learned about, and when I was really going through it, was like the lotus flower, like grows literally out of mud into this like beautiful flower that emerges from mud. And it's always been such a, I'm such a visual person in general, but it's like it's that visualization of thinking about that, of like, that's where the beauty comes from, is where the pain and the heart and the heartache that we have for different things in our life is really where we take a step back and we look deeper at ourselves and we just grow and learn. I mean, there's like, one of the things that I think about all the time is like how grateful I am for all the pain that I've endured in the last 5 years, because it's grown me and it's made me a better person and a better mom and a better human and a better friend and just all the things. And you just don't get to that kind of like humility and that kind of like introspective self-awareness unless you've been through some really hard times. And by the way, nobody's getting out of that. Like everybody is going to deal with that at some point in their life. And it knocks you down pretty hard when you first go through it. And then you go through it, you feel the pain, and then you emerge really beautiful on the other end. And it's really what's happened to me. And it's like learning is never ending as well, which is always fun.
I love that so much. And you also say in your book, I can assure you it all works out the way it's supposed to in the end. Instead of regrets, focus on learning and moving forward. And I loved every square inch of this book, right down to the very last sentence. Like it was just so juicy, the whole thing. Yeah. And it was just so amazing. And then I also like, you wrote, when you find your limits, experiment and ask for help and take a good hard look in the mirror and understand that you're capable of more than you're currently willing to believe. Now, there's a lot in that sentence right there, but you talk a lot in your book about reaching out for help and asking for help and getting help. And I think you're a very humble person. And I love that about you, because you just put it all out on the line. Like you've had a lot of really hard things that we don't have time to go into today. But just know, listeners, when you listen to this episode and when you read the book, like you learned so much that went on and is still going on in Allie's life. Like it hasn't been a bed of roses. Like you may be thinking to yourself, oh, well, she's kind of had that perfect life. No, that is not the case at all. I even like at one point you ended up working with your brother's ex-wife, Sarah. And I love the title that you ended up giving her in your company, Spirit Director. That is so cool.
I know, isn't that great?
That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she came up with that title and we all loved it so much because it really was her getting out into the stores and connecting with people. And she's just has a very like fun, infectious personality, and she's a DJ. And so it was like not a title anybody had ever thought about, but it was so brilliant because it was an important like thing to introduce. And then I think that's kind of always part of what we're trying to do, is like be inventive and think out of the box. And how do we do things like to get people excited and motivated and all that? So that was so great. And people really loved, and they would tell her things that they wouldn't tell their manager and certainly wouldn't tell me. So yeah, it really worked on a lot of levels.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, Allie, this conversation has been nothing short of amazing. I feel like we packed a lot of punch in for the amount of time. And how can my listeners get a hold of you? And where can they find your book?
Well, my book is sold, you know, on Amazon or anywhere you really get books. There's also an audio version of it, which I read. So that's fun. So you can get that on Audible. And then right now, my kind of hub for everything I do is on my Instagram, which is just Allie Webb. And I have so many projects coming out. I have a mastermind that I lead. If you're an entrepreneur that's interested in learning directly from me alongside Jacqueline Johnson, who started Create and Cultivate, which I don't know if you're familiar, but that was a big company for a while, and which she sold, and Marina Middleton. So the three of us do this mastermind that's great for entrepreneurs. I do a lot of like one-on-one through intro coaching and mentoring, and I do feel very strongly about giving back. So I'm kind of always doing that.
I love that about you. You are,
giving back,
helping elevate. Yeah. And I love to acknowledge people and how they're being either and or they're a great example and they're sharing their knowledge and wisdom with the world.
I was so lucky to have people do that for me. So that's also part of why I feel so compelled to. So,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. And this book, I love how transparent you are about your growth, your personal growth.
Thank you.
It's really, really beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today, Ali. Thank you so
much. Yeah, this was so fun. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for taking time out of your busy life to listen to today's episode. I love learning about what makes you brave. I'm here with you. I see you. I hear you. And I want to hear from you. I want to know how you're showing up as being brave and authentic. Connect with me on Instagram at She's Brave Podcast, or come join our community in the She's Brave Podcast Facebook group. I'm sending you so much love. Until next time, keep being brave.